On today's College Football Inquirer, it's all happening. The last quarterback who hasn't jumped into the transfer portal, please turn out the lights. Also, court case in Alabama that may have a severe impact on how the NCAA doles out discipline. Plus, it might actually affect the Michigan coaching search, which is another thing we really need to talk about because Alabama coach Kalen DeBoer, with a playoff game coming up this week, got asked twice about the Michigan job and whether he's staying at Alabama, because that's just the sport college football is. Also today, Stephen Godfrey saves the Bulls. All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples, and Ross, the hat is the best reason for all of you who listen in podcast form. Just every once in a while, you may want to join us on the Yahoo Sports Network and watch us on video. Click on your smart TV, find that Yahoo Sports Network icon on the home screen, and click on it, and then click on the College Football Inquirer, or go to yahoosports.tv. That is yahoosports.tv. Any device, anytime, day or night, and you can see what Ross has on his head.
My took, as the
I got
calls
him using it. I got
this
him
is a
using
Park
it.
Park City took.
Heck yeah. Oh, now that's where I wouldn't mind being, because it's cold in Florida right now, which defeats the point of Florida.
What is cold in Florida?
It's in the 30s at night.
Okay. All right. I'll allow it. That's cold.
And possibly that's the reason DJ Lagway left the town I live in. No, that is not why DJ Lagway jumped in.
Look at that segue, ladies and gentlemen. God.
In case you're wondering, every piece of news happened Monday in college sports. But the biggest chunks of news were quarterbacks announcing they were going into the transfer portal, or at least leaking that they were going into the transfer portal. DJ Lagway from Florida just straight up announced it. You also had Dylan Raiola from Nebraska heading to the transfer portal, and Brendan Sorsby from Cincinnati heading to the transfer portal. These guys will all be pretty wanted men, though I was joking around with some other people today. I asked my On3 co-host Ari Wasserman, I said, okay, you're an offensive coordinator and you can pick between Lagway, Raiola, and Sorsby. Who are you picking? And Ari's eyes start switching, because once you're a five-star quarterback, you're always a five-star quarterback. Like when Spencer Rattler came in for one play in the Saints game on Sunday, he's like, five-star! So he can't let that go. The answer is probably Brendan Sorsby. But
once a bunch of dorks on the internet call you a five-star when you're with your 18-year-old body, then even the facts of the football field can't prove them wrong. Was this expected, this volume of starters? Like, and I know individually you could make the case, and I saw the reports that Lagway may have not had the best initial meeting with the new Florida staff. So I know all these are contextual, but
I don't know that Lagway had the option to continue at Florida at his current price point, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You know what?
Yeah, I think that's happening a lot.
It happens to the best of us.
I think that's happened a lot. I mean, not that that was necessarily exactly the case, too, at Nebraska with Dylan Raiola, but Nebraska was paying Dylan Raiola a lot of money. And I think that I think over the last 3 or 4 weeks, it seemed like there was some public reporting about this, that there seemed to be the climate there, the feeling, whatever the vibe there was, that he was inching toward entering the portal. And I think there came to a point maybe late last week or so where there was such flirtation from him in potentially getting in the portal that at some point, right, even teammates and staff at Nebraska's like, just go ahead. We need to make the decision, right? You need to make the decision so we know in January if we need to go out and get a quarterback. And so he did make the decision, and now they're moving on, and they probably are shifting, you know, the amount left on his contract, which I believe was couple of years and over $3 million, to other players, maybe a couple of other players.
So maybe this is the new normal, because the storyline around, like, at least these three individuals, very different. Lagway, you have a new staff in, right? We established there's a issue with price point, let's say. Raiola, performance and commitment related issues. And then you would assume in the case of Cincinnati and Sorsby, he's just trying to move on up, right? He's just trying
yeah.
to
awesome
maximize yeah. value.
Striking while the iron's hot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And so you can't fault either of the six parties involved. This is the new normal. This is what personnel looks like moving forward.
Well, it's also interesting because the timing. So December 15th was Monday's date. And in case you've ever gotten checks from people, sometimes they come on the 15th and the 30th. Mm-hmm. And the 15th of December seems to be not a universal date in college football, but a fairly common date in college football for the last check of a season to arrive.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So contractual duties fulfilled or contractual checks fulfilled. Okay. All right.
Yep. Middle of the month, right? And there's a lot. I think January 15th is another one, which comes like a day before the portal ends, which is more complicated issues that could cause. But yeah, it's funny now. Right now, you've got all these things happening. You've got teams preparing for playoff game, bowl, some schools still looking for a coach, plenty of staff members trying to get other jobs and be retained by their current school, including those competing for the playoff, and schools trying to retain players or sign new ones or prepare for the portal. It is like, whew, a mess of stuff right now.
It's all at once, and they've tried to space it out. That's why the portal is opening in January and not open now, because it would have been open for a week had this been last year.
But we all knew, Andy, when they did this, that it wasn't really going to solve the problem because players were going to get in the quote portal before it opened. And lo and behold, that's what we're seeing.
If you follow the NFL, they have free agency and they have what they call the tampering period before free agency, which is where all the deals actually get done. So once the tampering period starts, that's really the start of free agency. And that's as soon as your season ends, that's when your start of free agency is in college football. Because you have to get out ahead of everybody. And Sam Leavitt at Arizona State, another quarterback in the portal. And if we're, you know, ranking all of these guys, I'd say Sam Leavitt's probably the one at the top. And then we'll see, because it's interesting because Sorsby had the best year of the other ones. But I also think there are going to be a lot of coaches who are going to look at DJ Lagway and his skill set and go, I can fix him.
Yeah.
Sure, he's not super accurate. Throw some picks. I can fix him.
Yeah. To Ari's somewhat salient point, there, you are looking at raw talent in the market, right? You're looking at something that you can utilize. Although, look, change of scenery is one thing. Change of scheme might be even better for Lagway. Just something with a little bit more consistency.
Well, and he's interesting because he missed so much of the offseason last year with various injuries. And so didn't really get a chance to throw with his teammates, didn't really get a chance to throw in spring practice, barely in camp. And so let's say he winds up at, this is not a totally hypothetical school, LSU with Lane Kiffin. Let's say he winds up there and he has all spring and all summer to work with the new teammates. And he has a better QB coach than what he had under Billy Napier at Florida in Lane Kiffin and a better play caller in the Lane Kiffin, Charlie Weiss Jr. poo-poo platter. I bet that's a pretty good QB. Now, Sam Leavitt may also be a target of them. And if they get Sam Leavitt, Katie bar the door.
Well, the last time they got an Arizona State quarterback.
It worked out okay.
Turned out okay. This is why you pay attention to this stuff, because we just gave a Heisman to a transfer quarterback who, I believe, as we were discussing today, what entered this time last year, right?
Fernando Mendoza entered the portal this time last year, was pursued by Georgia and looked at the Georgia situation, which at this time last year, Carson Beck had not made a decision. He was dealing with an elbow injury, was going to have surgery. I mean, he may have already had the surgery, but he had a rehab ahead of him. And then Gunnar Stockton was going to start the Sugar Bowl against Notre Dame, and there was no telling what that was going to look like. Because if Gunnar Stockton had won the Sugar Bowl and led Georgia through the playoff, there would be no shot of getting the starting job at Georgia. And so Mendoza took the Indiana one, which was an open job.
Turned out okay.
Turned out all right.
Pretty good. And that's a full, we discussed this, I think, on the last pod, but fourth straight transfer to win the Heisman. Maybe three out of four of those quarterbacks.
Yeah, Bryce, Travis, right. Three out of four Travis Hunter was, yeah, and then Hunter. Bryce Young was your last non-transfer Heisman Trophy winner. But before him, you had multiple transfer Heisman Trophy winners.
Yep. Yep. So who are we picking? Who's winning the Heisman of the transfers?
I don't know if this says anything yet, other than that college is still about development. Perhaps it says that, right? That all of these individuals, Travis Hunter's situation is a little bit extreme with the relationship with Prime. So maybe we toss that one out. But in the case of someone like Mendoza, that's a good, or even going back to, we discussed this on Sunday, so I don't want to be redundant, but someone like Baker, the circumstances around the way in which you enter college football and how you commit and what you can and can't control with your coaching staff have always been slanted against the player. So I think we're going to see this more often than not. So I would say the next 10 Heismans, would it be safe to say that seven of those 10 are probably going to involve at least one transfer at the FBS level? That feels almost certain at this point.
I'd say that's fair. Mm-hmm. But I do think we're seeing something a little bit different now. And we started to see it last year, but Ross brought it up with the Raiola situation. I talked about it with the Lagway situation. These are guys who are established starters who, if one had a coaching change, that adds something to it, but the other didn't have a coaching change, but neither of them lived up to their lofty expectations slash lofty paycheck. Yeah. And I do wonder,
the latter.
Right. And I do wonder, until there's a CBA and you have binding contracts that go both ways, I don't know that we're going to see. Like, you're going to have to really earn and kind of sing for your supper as a QB. You're going to have to earn it, or you're going to have to be drastically underpaid, threaten to leave, then get overpaid.
So basically, if you're a successful quarterback in a 3-year span, you're constantly renegotiating.
Correct.
If you're staying at one institution.
Yes, you'd better be good enough to justify your price point or willing to take a pay cut. That is that's the conundrum there. And you can price yourself out of the market as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that people need to be careful. That's what we talk about a truly free market, and that's kind of what this is. This is a truly free market. But there's always an upper boundary.
It's worth mentioning another transfer quarterback of note this weekend. Mm. Do you guys remember the story about not getting paid, right? The JMU quarterback, UNLV.
Matthew Sluka.
I was just thinking about this today, actually. Matthew Sluka, there was an initial reaction, and there was like a lot of chatter about him, and then it turns out there were some commitments made that weren't followed through on. Matthew Sluka, kind of big finger quotes here, walks out on the UNLV team, depending on your prerogative there. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy behind him because he ended up playing better, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. it wasn't actually like, it was a little bit of the Ewing theory loss for UNLV, but Sluka ended up at James Madison.
Because he played for Bob Chesney at Holy Cross.
Yeah. So how these things are managed is...
But he's not their starter, by the way.
No, not starting. I know he's on the roster. I didn't think he was actually. He didn't. Yeah, it's Barrett,
he's the backup.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. It's interesting now how these things are going to be handled financially in the offseason, and if there can be any stability as you are performing at or above expectation as a quarterback, because otherwise this is probably going to be the norm. We're probably going to have a Black Monday type situation every December. Mm-hmm. In the quarterback free agency market, if we don't get a little more guardrails around that.
Until some kind of, bargaining agreement and more binding contracts are come to college football, which doesn't sound like anytime soon, although because of the failures in Congress in the CSC participation agreement, I think there's more than not, and this is something that was a topic in Las Vegas last week, more talk about, well, what other options do we have, which is really only one other option.
Remember, coaches have always cut loose the QBs they didn't want. That's always happened.
Runoff was like a common verb when coaches would talk off the record about how they were going to handle their roster. We're running that guy off. So this is, if anything, this new market gives at least these guys a little bit of cash before they go out the door. So you can say DJ was run off, right?
But right, you can also get run off because you're more expensive than the new coach thinks you were.
Right.
No doubt. Yeah.
And that was abundantly clear. Like I'm at the press conference where John Summerall gets introduced. You can see DJ Lagway in the back of the room. And I think it's one of those, like, because I think the public now in this era thinks it's always the player being greedy. But that's not the case. Like, no. DJ Lagway wanted to play for Florida. DJ Lagway came to Florida. He wanted to have a statue out in front of the stadium like Tim Tebow and Danny Werfel and Steve Spurrier. That's all he wanted. Also, to be paid what he thought he was worth. Now, they gave him a lot of money going into this season. He's a $2 million plus guy, maybe even, he was close to $3 million, I believe. So they gave him a lot of money. He did not, from a market perspective, play well enough to make that much. And so that's when they come in, the new group comes in, and they're not that high on him anyway, and they're certainly not high on him at the price.
Two things. One, we're still trying to figure out valuation because NIL is still very cloak and dagger. It's a new market after we've essentially removed all the regulation. So economics tells us it takes some time to actually suss out market value. And then we just need more supply and demand years of kind of figuring out, like, this is how much you should pay for a quarterback in the SEC. Two, this is not a referendum against John Summerall. I don't want that to be the perception here that they walked in and said, you're getting too much money. John Summerall, I think, really, really deftly handled the situation at Tulane with Darian Mensah in the offseason. He never, ever once faulted Mensah for leaving. Darian Mensah was a Tulane quarterback who went and basically took a free agent contract, if you will, to go to Duke. Okay. Partially, I think that's because John Summerall and his camp knew, hey, I'm probably going to be coaching in the SEC or somewhere a little bit bigger than Tulane in a year. So this is not a philosophical decision on Summerall's part.
I think it's just managing numbers. On the part of Summerall and Buster Faulkner in that they value accuracy in a quarterback, and DJ Lagway is not an accurate passer.
Yeah. I just don't think he fit. I think it's the dollar amount and the fit. And one of those could be a little out of alignment, but not both.
Yeah, and these dollar amounts, like, as Godfrey said, we're still early into this. I mean, we're 4 years into the NIL era, but right, we're just a few months into this new, like, rev share cap sort of era thing that we're going through. And schools are still trying to figure out exactly how much money they can spend and how much money over the cap they can get through NIL Go, which converts to how much money they can offer, you know, players. And so far, right, we've seen some of the numbers from the College Sports Commission, and, you know, most of the deals are getting through. A lot of them are above the cap, you know, multimedia rights, corporate sponsor, redirect money. Instead of that money going to the athletic department, it's going to the roster. And that stuff appears to be getting through. There are some collective deals, like old school collective deals, that aren't getting through. But there's some, you know, again, collective deals that are more moving money from the athletic department and sponsorship stuff into the players that are getting
through.
It's very hard
for them to tell corporate money that what you think this person's worth is not what they're worth.
Right.
That's a fun way to
do it. And, you know, this other thing is nobody will sign, or not nobody, everybody won't sign the College Sports Commission participation agreement, which kind of hampers if there are any red flags or anything pops up, kind of hampers the enforcement of the CSC. So we still don't know about that either. So everybody's working in this, like, limbo era where they're not exactly sure how much money they have, but they're sort of stretching the limits as much as they can.
Well, and also, when you're a new coach like John Summerall, or even a incumbent coach like Matt Rhule at Nebraska, if you don't know how much you're going to have, and you're about to enter a situation where the portal will be open in a few weeks, you don't want to overspend when you're not sure you're paying the right guy top dollar.
We haven't yet seen Moneyball. It won't occur exactly like Moneyball occurred, but someone is going to gamify the system.
Isn't Trinidad Shambliss Moneyball?
He's close to it, but that's also, we would need to understand Trinidad Shambliss, the Ole Miss quarterback. We would need to understand what he was paid relative to where they saved the money and where they put that savings. And true. And I don't know which.
And also, they probably did pay Austin Simmons a significant amount of money.
Definitely.
Because he was the incumbent, or he was the heir apparent starter. There was interest in him from other schools. So, yeah.
Yeah. Did they save anything? Or did they just, was that just a case of good scouting and good personnel? And if I recall, when we talked about Chambliss, it was just more about, hey, we're going to take a guy who was a starter and recruit him to a school that doesn't really have an opening, or they thought at the time. And so that was really kind of the
And nobody thought that he would be willing to come somewhere as a backup.
Right.
Ole Miss said, we're going to ask you. And he surprised them by saying yes.
Yeah, this is why I know people are tired of people like us saying this. We're only 4 years in. I know people think 4 years is a long time. There's decades of philosophy and personnel management and building, whether it be corporate America or Major League Baseball. College football still hasn't even sorted itself out. And so philosophically, it's hard to build context, and it's hard to have a blueprint, even, you know, with your rivals or like, you know, one day we're going to have GM trees, guys. You think about all the, no, I'm serious. Mm-hmm. Think about all the GM trees that came out of New England that are now coming out of Kansas City in the NFL. How many guys who worked for the Chiefs are in front offices? We can't really have that yet until we find someone. And our job in the media is to report the blueprint, kind of contextually explain why, and then go out, and then that's replicated. We haven't figured any of this out yet.
Yeah, is Indiana doing like the most at the power conference level, perhaps, by spending maybe the least or the way they're spending it? I don't know. I don't know exactly what they're spending, but I can't imagine it's, you know, from what I've heard, like the Ohio States and all that stuff.
I don't think they're
Texas A&M's.
I would bet that Indiana is not in the top third of the Big Ten in what they're spending, because their best players, with the exception of Mendoza, who they did get
from JMU,
came from JMU, and then they retained them, which I imagine, like Elijah Surratt and D'Angelo Pons and some of those guys that were great last year after coming from JMU, I imagine they were pretty expensive to keep. But probably not as expensive as some of those free agents that were out there who wound up not being as good as them.
Okay, so a philosophical tenet then to build is pay to retain, not to acquire, if you're Kurt Cignetti. Identify early. This is common in baseball. So like, I'm a Braves fan, and this has been emulated.
I mean, this is what Georgia's trying to do. Georgia's not, they're not wholesale. Yeah. Like, they're just plugging holes with the portal.
Right. So NFL and MLB, as I sit here and think about it, like Howie Roseman would probably tell you this. I know Alex Anthopoulos in Atlanta is like, if you draft exceptionally well, if you identify young talent exceptionally well, and you have organizational consistency, tough word there, sorry, then it is easier to retain them and pay for the extension or the second contract in the NFL or what have you in baseball. Maybe that philosophy would apply to college. Problem is, we just don't. Ross said it. We don't know. I need to know how many dollars you are spending on this thing. And then how many dollars you didn't spend on that D lineman or vice versa, what have you, in order to establish context. We think Indiana is spending X, and we think, you know, Ohio State's spending Y. Until we can get in those books. And I also am very curious. I know you guys have heard about the way certain deals are structured. That's another part of this. Not everybody is. Look, there's no CBA, guys. Like, there's no CBA. There is no pretext for this. You can structure these deals in a number of ways. And I think what we don't know right now is killing us analytically, at least on the outside.
Which I think a lot of schools feel like there's an opportunity there. There's an opening to take advantage of that.
Yes.
And we'll see who can. But when we come back, another opening, and this one comes from a courtroom with a familiar face that we have not heard from in a while. The last time we saw him, he was wearing that checkerboard babushka in 2020. What does Jeremy Pruitt have to do with babushka? The current coaching carousel? We'll tell you when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and Stephen Godfrey has informed me that it is a balaclava and not a babushka that Jeremy Pruitt was wearing in 2020 as the head coach of the Tennessee Vols. It had a checkerboard on it. It was awesome. It was very stylish, given
the
masking requirements of the time. But
he just sort of wore it like a giant, like if you undid a turtleneck. I know.
That's what, it's made it so great.
I know we were all trying to get by back then. And like, I'll tell stories to my grandkids or whatever. That was the most ill-fitting COVID requirement. Yeah. Like I'm surprised he didn't just constantly walk into people on the sideline.
And at one point, didn't he have it where like the wind was blowing and it blew up and it just covered his face? And TV TV got it where his whole face was just covered. The eyes, everything.
Yeah. It kind of fit his personality, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Jeremy Pruitt back in the news on Monday. A judge in DeKalb County, Alabama, granted a preliminary injunction to Jeremy Pruitt against the NCAA. So remember, Jeremy Pruitt got fired by Tennessee, essentially thrown to the NCAA Wolves by Tennessee so they didn't have to pay his buyout. And of course, he'd rather sloppily broken some NCAA rules. And so he got a show cause, which is NCAA speak for: if you hire this person, you must show us why they deserve to work there, and we're going to be up your you know what's at all times because you're employing them. And sometimes they attach other penalties to it. With him, I believe there's some suspension type stuff. But this judge grants the injunction. So now, if Jeremy Pruitt wants to go to work somewhere, which Jacksonville State had successfully petitioned the NCAA to allow them to hire him as a remote analyst, now he probably has a chance to do quite a bit more. And so Mike Rodak from 24/7 covering the case quotes DeKalb County Judge Andrew Hairston in his injunction decision. This is what Hairston wrote. A reasonable-minded juror could conclude that the Committee on Infractions process was procedurally and substantively deficient. This lack of transparency, due process, and fairness lends to the conclusion that the plaintiff has at least a reasonable likelihood of success at trial. Ross, please translate for us.
Well, number one with this case is, while Jeremy Pruitt certainly broke a lot of rules, you know, the main ones were paying players and the parents, which
also
now
not against the rules
is legal. Now is legal. So it was legal, what, maybe a year after, or a year and a half or so after it all happened?
6 months after his firing, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm still convinced they came down on him harder because he used McDonald's bags and not Chick-fil-A. if he'd have gone with league sponsors.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one, you have to look at that situation, that now pretty much everything. And he was one of the last cases, him, the Will Wade case. Right, was one of the couple of the last athlete compensation cases before or even during the NIL era, and so now both of those cases, I think most people would say, are looked differently. Imagine NC State, or for that matter, McNeese, hiring immediately Will Wade after his NCAA infractions. That doesn't happen, right? If the
worked
NIL
out pretty well.
Era doesn't come, and so now this it just reminds me of that as well. And so to me, when I'm, you know, we've seen a lot of NCAA rules, the transfer movement and the policy, the athlete compensation, eligibility as well. We've seen a lot of NCAA rules sort of crumble or collapse under antitrust scrutiny from the courts. And this feels like yet another one that's under attack and potentially going to go away is the show cause, which always used to put the fear of God into people, right? Like, a show cause really was just a suspension for an X amount of years because nobody really challenged it. And now here we are.
It was an individual death penalty, basically. Yeah. The death penalty goes out of style the moment the conferences start negotiating TV deals collectively as an entity, because if one school's transgressions against the NCAA were never going to cost the entire conference money, and the networks didn't want that. So show causes ticked up as a punishment for individuals, but it's so funny. I don't know if you guys think about it the way I do, but I'm surprised it took this long. And, you know, Pruitt's a little bit of a kind of a funny tale, and, you know, he's not the most sympathetic.
He's not a sympathetic figure, but it doesn't matter. And it's interesting because it's not just the players who can be colluded against. And I think that's the part that people seem to miss is this. The whole system of governance is collusion if you don't collectively bargain it.
I had I had an athletic director right before the rules changed and right before we still couldn't pay players, and they went up against the COI, and he's still an athletic director today, and the power, and he kind of walked out, and he talked to me afterwards on the phone. He's like, and this is a direct quote, he said, they just make this up. And what he's talking about is the committee on infractions and how closed it is. And it's funny, like, listening to the details, Andy, that you just read off, this really does sort of kneecap a man's ability to make a living by these arbitrary rules. Yeah. And we've gone along with this for decades.
Yeah.
When I say it's shadowy, when I say it's collusion, like, I don't think people realize the process of the old COI. It's completely secretive. You don't have access to any of it. There's no due process. Sometimes you don't even know what you're going up against.
If you attempt to make it public, they make it worse.
Yeah, they do. Yes, they do. As someone who's published transcripts from NCAA interviews and from the COI before, they don't like that at all. What's funny is when you hand those transcripts to actual lawyers, they roll in the aisles laughing because they just start immediately picking apart the things that you can't do in court.
Well,
because of the rights given to the individuals.
Yeah.
I will go back to a case years ago. Both of these people have passed away, so I think they're probably okay with this. This is John Blake, the former, he was the Oklahoma head coach, but he was also a North Carolina assistant. And so he goes before the COI. His attorney is a guy named William Beaver. And Bill Beaver hadn't really done much with the NCAA. He had a very thriving practice, but John and him were friends going way back. And so he represented John Blake. And I remember talking to Bill as he's coming out of the COI hearings. This is, I think, that night. And he's like, we did great. It was awesome. We answered every question. And, I think procedurally we were on point. And then the punishments come down and they just hammer John Blake. And he's like, what happened? And I was like, it doesn't matter, dude. They already knew before you got in there.
Yeah.
I think you could ask Ohio State AD Ross Bjork about this when he went through the gulag with Ole Miss. They left their COI thinking they killed it. Like, we presented a counter argument. We showed why the case had holes in it. We showed the discrepancies in the evidence. Like, they walked out, chests out, guns blazing, and they got crushed. Like, it doesn't really matter. That's why I quoted the other AD by saying they make this all up. There's really, because it's so clandestine, and because there's also, so Ross, you can stop me because you'd be the one most qualified to sort of answer this. Like, when you go to the Supreme Court takes cases and they rule on them based on previous precedent, right? So this thing happened in this case, and then that's going to inform, the ruling in this, that's how basically the judicial system sort of builds out like a consensus. I think I made a C in comm law. But the NCAA will tell you very transparently that every single case they hear in infractions, even when they are related either by sport or transgression, they have the silo rule, the silo principle, which is that everything must be graded, evaluated, and judged in a vacuum, which creates the opposite effect. There's no context, there's no precedent, and you can't really...
Inconsistencies.
Oh, galore. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. And it's been like that forever.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you put it in a real courtroom, that's what happens. What you saw Monday is what happens. And so here's how that affects, it affects Jeremy Pruitt now, who probably his employment prospects go up. But there's a guy in the Michigan coaching search. His name we've thrown around, but we said, I don't know if they could hire him. And that's Jesse Minter, the defensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Chargers, who has a show cause, and it's a year show cause. It will expire sometime this calendar year. The date it was agreed upon was April 28th, but I've been told it actually started a little bit later than that. But now, I don't know that it matters. I don't know if Michigan wanted to hire him as their head coach, I don't think that would the show cause piece of it would matter at all because of what happened with Jeremy Pruitt.
I think you're correct, but I also still we brought up his name initially last week.
I think they would shy away from anyone from the Jim Harbaugh tree.
Yes, that's where I'm headed.
For those reasons. But here's the thing. Jesse Minter, I also think, is probably going to be in line for NFL head coaching jobs. But if he wasn't,
Yeah.
Okay.
And wanted to be a college head coach, not at Michigan.
Or if Michigan runs out of options on the market because of the weird timing of this. Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like they would rather a sitting, you know, power conference head coach. But if they get down the line, you know, which we saw several coaching searches this cycle get down the line. I mean, it was one in state college that ended up getting down the line, perhaps getting
where it should have been
the candidate
along.
That should have, would have been at the top of the line.
Guys, they couldn't find his number. It's really hard. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So here's, this is why I brought this up, because the Michigan search is seemingly moving down the line. I realize nobody believes Kalen DeBoer when he puts out a statement on Sunday or when he answers at the press conference twice on Monday that he's not leaving Alabama.
Why? Why would they not believe him? It's not like every other coach just said they wouldn't take a job and then
Okay. Who other than Nick Saban?
Yeah, that's the famous one.
Very famously, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. Who other than Nick Saban has flat out lied?
Blatantly lied.
It's got to
be some. Who?
Tommy Tuberville said, "I'll leave here in a pine box."
Yeah,
he left Ole Miss for Auburn.
Oh man, you're doing this on the spot, Andy. Yeah. I feel like
I could
get you a
time,
list.
But
I
feel
what I'm saying is there aren't as many as you actually think there are.
Maybe
usually, the words are chosen very carefully. Kalen DeBoer's words were not chosen. Well, they were probably chosen carefully, but they were not. He's kind of locked himself in. I don't think he's going anywhere. Go watch Kenny Dillingham's press conference on Saturday at Arizona State. There you will see some very carefully chosen words. In fact, a little choke up at the thought of the coaching at Arizona State and the opportunity presented to him at his alma mater. But never once did he say, "I'm going to be the head coach of Arizona State next season." And Kalen DeBoer has said, "I am going to be the coach of Alabama next season."
If this festering trash fire of an athletic department in Ann Arbor ends up with Kenny Dillingham as their head coach, they have nine lives. You want to talk about throwing a cat off a roof and landing on its feet?
Well, no, Godfrey, they have cool helmets, a great tradition, and lots of money. That's what they have.
I mean, if talk about all's well that ends well. All's well that, like, if you ended up with Kenny Dillingham, and well, there's also the caveat, it is Michigan. And we know historically they will tamper with a coach's philosophy if it doesn't align with their sort of overall mantra. There's a decent book written about that. And so if they let Kenny Dillingham be Kenny, like let him do what he is sort of designed to do, let the man cook. That would just be stunning. That would be stunning. I don't think it's going to happen only because I just have such a tough time seeing Kenny Dillingham in Ann Arbor.
Like it would be very hard for him to leave Arizona State. He did present a pretty compelling case for staying in that press conference where he didn't actually say, "I'm not leaving," but he did present a pretty compelling case.
Do you think he's there if Mike Norvell, if Florida State wasn't credit card broke?
I don't know.
All right. What if Dan Lanning goes to the NFL?
Or if Lane had chosen to stay at Ole Miss and LSU was still open?
Man, the untapped power of Kenny Dillingham and Baton Rouge. That's just good. That's good for everyone involved. It didn't happen. What if Dan Lanning goes to the NFL?
He's not going to the NFL.
I know. This is a hypothetical.
I'm saying Kenny's movable, I think.
Producer T.J. Cut my mic.
For the right
job. He hasn't signed his new deal, right? That's on the table, so to speak.
And by the way, always Ross, that. I would suspect that Kalen DeBoer's deal is getting sweetened here. I don't know when we're going to find that out, like when that will be finalized, ink dried. But
well, depending on how sweet would be on the outcome of Friday's game, perhaps.
Right. Yeah. Correct.
Ross.
And that's the other piece of it. Alabama is playing Oklahoma Friday in the college football playoff.
Yeah.
Ross,
you
remember the nickname of Greg Byrne when he earned when he was AD at Mississippi State. He's the ninja.
Oh, Ninja. Yes, the Ninja.
Remember Ninja? Yeah.
I thought I gave that to John Swofford when he stole multiple schools.
I think this is like a very deep, deep Mississippi cut that Ross and I are both aware of. Greg Byrne can operate in total silence sometimes and make something happen. So that's why I always give an AD gangster status, Greg Byrne.
There's a certain commissioner perhaps in the Southeast that operates in a similar way, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he's a ninja his own way.
He can move bodies, man.
So, we'll see what happens Friday because I'm still sticking with my prediction of, you know, Sunday-ish after the game, for that to happen, just because I think there's at least a there's no hurry, it seems, from the Michigan people.
Well, they can at least reach out, because it's clear Kalen said, I ain't talking to anybody till this game.
Right.
What if, all right, can I just add this in? Because I know I feel like people are yelling at their podcasting device of choice, or on YouTube or on the Yahoo app. What is any of this affected by a particular outcome?
I don't think he's leaving. Ross may disagree.
If Oklahoma beats the brakes off of him?
Yeah, that's the thing that people would be watching for. That would create a possible path, I guess. I don't necessarily think so either, Andy. And he has been pretty upfront about it. There are people in the coaching community, not necessarily close to him, but perhaps that have worked with him in the past, that think that is a job that is very attractive to him. But he's in a pretty attractive job right now. But I think there is by the Michigan folks who don't seem to be in a rush with this search and have a lot of other things going on, right? This athletic department investigation, and the signing day is already done. So they don't seem to be in a rush. Like, well, why not just wait till after Friday's game just to see what happens? And if they lose, is there a conversation that can be had? I don't know.
Maybe it's Brent Venables, and it's been Brent Venables this whole time.
Yeah, maybe so. There you go.
You make him sound like a Scooby-Doo villain, like somebody who's going to unmask him.
The pro wrestling that never leaves you.
Brent Venables all along, and I would have gotten away with it if you hadn't been for you meddling kids.
It was me, Austin. It's called a swerve, Andy. Brent Venables will not be the next head coach of Michigan. This is going to end up on the internet. Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
That Newsweek guy is going to be like, Stephen Godfrey reported that Brent Venables is going to Michigan.
Surprise candidate for Wolverines. Click to find out.
I've ground the show to a halt now, I apologize for that.
It's because you're thinking about Brent Venables in Ann Arbor, aren't you?
I am. I can't help it.
Yeah. No,
he's not going to Newsweek guy.
No,
please don't do that.
No,
please.
No,
I'm telling you, Newsweek guy, nobody's reporting anything.
No. According to Lincoln Riley, people will invade my house if that happens. Okay, so don't do that.
So we do need to talk about something else, though, because I've been teasing this for, I think, the last four episodes. We have to do it now.
Yeah.
When we return, Stephen Godfrey will save the Bulls. We'll be right back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and I'm sure, like everyone else, we watched the bucked up LA Bowl hosted by Gronk and said, boy, this is a cherished tradition that we all should save. Stephen Godfrey's going to save the Bulls. So
yeah.
I'm gonna give you the floor. I'm going to pass you the mic, Stephen Godfrey. Please save the Bulls.
Did anyone notice the wide shots of the bucked up LA Bowl? Because I don't even know if they were
empty.
If they legit sold 5,000 seats, I'd be shocked. Which brings us to the problem at hand. Okay, you two are not precious about the bowl system. I can just get in here and start breaking stuff, right?
Oh yeah,
we good? Okay, here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna jump right in because I know a lot of our audience works within the industry, so I'm gonna assume you guys know a lot. Not you two, obviously. You guys know a lot. That's why we host a show. But the audience, you just got to move fast with me because I also want my co-host to react to what they have not seen yet. So I got a couple categories here. What we're killing right away, how the selection will work after I'm done, and then who gets paid, and a little bit of advice at the end. Okay, so I'm going to do this rapid fire a little bit like Ross's Congressional Minute, all right? So the first thing that we're killing, there will be no existing tie-ins for selection. We're going to eliminate the orders by conference. There's no other standing conference affiliation. None of this SEC 1 versus ACC 4. You're done. No network ownership of a bowl game. No bowl will be created purely as TV filler while costing a city or any school any money. So what do I mean by that? There's a selection of bowls that are actually owned by a third-party company that is just owned by ESPN, which is then just owned by Disney, that they then fill out. So the most famous example of this used to be the Birmingham Bowl, which would come on right before NFL Wildcard Weekend on ESPN, simply just to have live TV inventory so they could sell at the same rate before, like, the Texans would lose to the Chargers or what have you. Sorry, Texans. All right. No mandatory ticket purchasing from schools invited. You sink or swim on how good of a matchup you can create. There will be no forced expenditures from on anyone's part of the participating parties. So the schools, their coaches, you can't pay. You can't say, hey, congratulations, Wake Forest, you're coming. Now you got to buy minimum 500 tickets.
That'll be 9,000 tickets that, you can, that you're paying
and,
for.
Again, original founder of this podcast, Dan Wetzel, it will be required reading one day when I am screaming from a pulpit in a college. Death to the BCS. It's still applicable. I did a show on Phantom Island with Dan Wetzel last year about how that book is still applicable today because the bowls still do heinous stuff and make people spend money that they shouldn't. Number four, no bowl can invite an FBS program with a record lower than 500. GTFO with that. How selection is going to work? I don't want to hear about your APR either. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about it. You can
but
scheme
the
APR.
Student
like you
athletes
scheme...
are being students, Godfrey. Come on.
Absolutely not. Sorry, nerds. Unless it's Rice because they run the option. How selection's going to work? All right. Now, the following was not my authorship. I actually called someone who currently works for a fairly prominent bowl who will definitely remain nameless because my name's associated with this and we're being fast and loose here. But I wanted the feedback of someone else before I just threw this out on a podcast. Bowls should be pooled and will be pooled when I take over the world by tiers. Those tiers will be determined by how much the game will pay out to its participants at a minimum. Notice I did not say schools directly. I said participants. We'll get to that. There's going to be a tier one of bowls, all right? By the way, this goes without saying. This doesn't involve the playoff. Everyone understands that I'm not changing the playoff, right? The playoff can be 16, 18, 12.
We're taking
12.
The bowls out of the playoff so they can just sink or swim.
Correct.
On their own.
That's a very good point, Mr. Staples. Thank you. So tier one bowls will be allowed to bid against one another. Bowls in tier one can also work together if they so choose, so long as the minimum payout is met. And collusion is fine, but you have to meet the floor. So what do I mean by that? Obviously, I mean, hey, if you are the, the Gator Bowl and the Music City Bowl, and you guys are both paying about the same amount, you guys compete against each other, or one year you can say, you know what, you guys take Vanderbilt this year and we'll take them next year, okay? It can be anything like that. It can also be competing against one another. Finally, bowls can contact schools immediately after the fifth win of that school's regular season, all right? Now, Who's going to get paid here? Players will be paid for their participation directly via NIL through bowl sponsors in exchange for public appearances / marketing, etc. That's it. Come at me with any other problems you got on that. Two, the head coach and staff will be paid directly by the bowl game for the same. Interim head coaches will be paid the same as regular head coaches. Let's get these poor bastards some money. All right? If you were the running backs coach all season and your coach just left your ass, and you and like three GAs have to get the team ready for the bowl that's on December 27th, get your money, son. I'm getting you an extra, let's say, 200 grand, okay?
Love it.
You've been head coach for 5 seconds. You might not ever be head coach again. I'm going to call this, the Tim Albin Memorial, all right?
Albin's a head coach now.
No, not Tim Albin. No. Sorry. No, Fresno State, UCLA. Wrong one.
Tim Skipper.
Jeff Tedder.
Tim Skipper. Sorry, yeah, Tim Skipper. Yeah. Sorry, that's who I meant to say. Tim Albin, you keep doing your style. You're good, buddy.
Getting your teams mixed up.
Number three, schools will also be paid by the bowls. That's obvious. I just had to say that because all the ADs are going to get all fussy. All right, here's my advice. Get weird. Embrace the mayonnaise and the Pop-Tarts, the et cetera mentality. Buck tradition, you see what I did there? In favor of engagement and uniqueness, because you are going to live or die on the engagement you receive by ticket sales, by marketability, and then by television ratings and whatever deal you make. Bowls should seek to create a compelling event for live fans and TV audiences with no bearing on tradition or history. These are one-off exhibitions. Now,
are you reading off of a plan?
I had some notes. Why?
You look. Oh no! I didn't know if you like laid all this out. You're ready to go.
He's actually got a murder board with strings in between.
Watch out!
This sounds like a book waiting to happen. Like Dan Wetzel's just death to the BCS.
TJ asked me to do this the other day, so I sketched it out real fast. All right. I did it in a text message really fast. All right. Now, a couple things. I talked to some individuals in the bowl community, if you will, who helped me cook all this. Okay. All right. So I had a couple of questions. I said, all right, well, the only thing missing is then how or when the game's there. And what does this do with negotiations with like ESPN or CBS or Fox? That individual said the bowl pooling should help with those television contracts. And you would allow for the bowls maybe to negotiate as a block and then be able to negotiate the times as well. All right, Andy, I feel like we have a lot of questions.
I also think you've done something smart here. because ESPN, by owning and operating so many bowls, and they own and operate quite a few bowls, ESPN Events does.
All but like, what, five or seven, maybe?
Yeah. You've actually created, because I think there are some other networks that would enjoy having live football on TV, because it's still cheaper and gets you more viewers than that scripted show that nobody wants to watch that you paid a lot of money for. So that would help.
That's why pro wrestling paid my mortgage for 5 years. Okay. All right. I was a little concerned about some of this stuff. I said, like, there are a couple issues here. They did push back on a couple of things. Maybe you can solve this. All right. How do you get selection efficiently after the playoff? That's why I said, as soon as you win five, you can start to be contacted by bowls. All right.
That's what the money's for.
We determined that you would only have, what, two or three teams on that sort of Mendoza line of omission from the playoff. And so that wouldn't necessarily knock everyone's bowl schedule out of array. It would just be the tier one bowls.
Can we do conditional bids, kind of like, I don't know, like for fraternity sorority bid day or sorority
We're
bid
fine
day?
Fine
like
with this.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing that I want to push here is that if you're a tier one bowl, you can pay minimum X to the schools and athletes. So it's minimum to the school, minimum per athlete participating in the coaches. You guys are going to be lumped in as one group together. You're going to bid and you're not going, there's no tradition here. It's just the compelling matchup. I am pissed as a college football viewer that we did not get Pitt versus Penn State this year in the bowls. There's no reason we couldn't have. Okay.
Well, apparently, and you can put it
apparently
together.
Dabo
for any
wanted to go to
want.
Dabo apparently wanted to go to New York. I'm serious. That was like something I heard on the phone. Was like Dabo, like it was like, oh, we really want to go up there to
they had quote unquote Charlotte fatigue.
Shut up, Dabo.
Clemson had Charlotte fatigue.
We're gonna let Dabo lose.
Fatigue 2 weeks ago.
We're gonna let Dabo and Mondami, New York. That's not a good idea for anybody. Okay, let's not do that. You should listen to my plan. Okay, stick his ass in Myrtle Beach.
I would love Mondami. To see Dabo reenact Home Alone 2.
Yeah, at the Plaza. Bowl. I just watched with my kids 2 nights ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
So I'm all for that, but I'm with you here. It can be for any reason that you schedule these matchups, but create juicy matchups. If you have two coaches who have a blood feud, put them together. Make them have a press conference together and hope they come to blows.
Pitt Penn State is a good example of rivals that don't always see each other, or a coach versus their former team. The last thing that was suggested to me that I thought was a bit much. I brought it up in like my initial draft. And then the individual who works for the Bulls said, you should put that in because I would love to see it and participate in it. You want reality TV, ESPN? You want reality TV? You want your stupid selection committee? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to sell this thing, but we're not going to sell it to you. We're going to sell it to Netflix. We're going to sell it to the highest bidder on a streamer. It's going to be a 4-part doc every year, and it's going to follow the committees as they compete with one another to basically get the bid of the
Look
team. Then I'm going to cut it up.
I love it.
I'm going to do a 2-hour documentary, 4 parts. It's going to be on a streamer. We're going to sell it every year. And this is going to be the drive to survive method.
The rivalries that will develop, like the Pop-Tarts Bowl versus the ReliaQuest Bowl.
There'll be some angry people. They get pretty hot and bothered in the selection
process. It's an incredibly weird culture of old white men in fluorescent blazers. If you're laughing at this as television content, this is how F1 became a popular American sport by opening the doors and creating instant streamable reality content. I can give you at least 2.5 hours. Maybe we could stretch it out and we sell that off to help pay for the actual events.
Do you know who else would love this, Godfrey?
Go ahead. I gotta breathe.
The brands.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mean like Pop-Tarts and Cheez-Its?
Pop-Tarts would love
ReliaQuest.
Yeah.
Cheez-It. They would love this. Yeah.
Bad Boy Mowers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Booked up.
Dare I say.
They
dare
may
I
pay
say,
more.
Oldie but goodie. Poulan Weed Eater.
Yeah. They may pay more. That way they can pay more to the teams to go because the teams lose money.
Participating in a reality show, making your coach participate in this. I would love nothing more than have a camera crew following Dabo after this season right now for 2 weeks and putting that in the TV show. Well, you think Dabo wants that? Tough, buddy. You want to get paid? You want that check? You got to participate. So if you're going to opt out, it's going to be for a damn good reason. It's because you
Dabo has to mow Yankee Stadium on a Bad Boy mower if he wants to coach in the Pinstripe Bowl.
With Mondami watching from the stands.
Correct. Correct. All right. Boy, that's going to be some terrible AI-generated art at the end of this episode. All right, look. I think I fixed this. I think if anything, I haven't even killed inventory. I might have created some new inventory because I think some enterprising young people and some hip brands are going to get together and they're going to make quality football instead of this noxious, boring filler that we use so we don't have to talk politics with somebody's in-law or uncle on the day before Christmas.
Well, the other part of this is you've already solved for the opt-outs, because the opt-outs are actually an easier problem to solve than people want to admit.
Yeah, pay
just
them.
Give them enough money to play.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty simple, right? Yeah. They've done that sort of already, or some have, I guess.
Everybody except the first rounders will play. The first rounders will opt out, and that's fine.
Fine. Yeah, that's totally fine. But the idea of a roster being depleted by opt out, if one or two guys who are projected first through third round go, hey, come up to the booth. I'll pay you to commentate. Call plays. Who cares? It's an exhibition. None of this matters. Let's just all make some money in it. And
I
just
thought you were
just like
moving this to August. This is so much better. I love this.
Well, that's you know, I was about to say that, Andy. That's a trendy idea by some people, even some in the bowl industry, right? Is, hey, we're gonna become the kickoff games, the preseason games, or whatever. The problem is mid-December, everybody's off work. There are all these TV windows to fill, and the bowls generate $1 to $2 million viewer because everybody's at home.
Beloved inventory.
You can't move them, I don't think.
And you can't get 2 million viewers. Like,
in mid-August.
The fact that you can get 2 million viewers with the Boca Raton Bowl is a miracle. Like, it's what I keep telling people. The bowls are not going to go away because you can't get 2 million people to watch two mediocre teams play any other time. Except right when you just mentioned, Godfrey, when it is December 23rd, and I have not wrapped a single present. And I need something to watch while I wrap presents and lock myself in the bedroom.
Yeah, it's that simple. Nobody really wants to have these conversations, but I'd be like, oh, man, what's up? There's old Western Kentucky. Oh, that BYU O-line started a fight. Like, that's what we need.
The
these
Western Kentucky Central Michigan Bahamas Bowl, the first ever Bahamas Bowl, might be one of the 10 greatest football games ever played.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I'm
it ended
not
on a 2-point conversion because a team had to make a flight.
Nice. Yeah.
Something is happening here, because I think we're getting closer to this, because the team that I grew up cheering for, Georgia Southern, they couldn't find an opponent for the Birmingham Bowl. So you know what they did? They tapped on the shoulder of their hated rival. So the name of the rivalry with App State is just called Deeper Than Hate. Instead of clean old-fashioned hate in the state of Georgia, it's Deeper Than Hate. They're just going to replay the rivalry game in Birmingham. And guess what? Have you looked at tickets? Do you know how cheap tickets to the Birmingham Bowl normally are? You could probably just walk in and set up a bomb and not hurt anybody at a normal Birmingham Bowl. People are coming to this game because it's an actual rivalry. Why not? It'll be a little bit warmer than it is in North Carolina. Go off, drink some beers. Hey, try and beat your rival again. Why not? Like, why not make it somewhat compelling for those of us watching the damn thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the tie-ins to the conferences are what is killing them now. Because they're locked into matchups, and it's better than it used to be, because it used to be like, how many times did Iowa have to play in the Outback Bowl? And I love Tampa. I used to live there. It is a wonderful, wonderful city, but you can't make the same people come to the same place every year.
So that is happening, right? You know, they're exploring doing that, and they've been for a couple of years. Nick Caparelli, the bowl season sort of executive director of the Trade Association of the Bowls, they've started to explore the untethering of these bowls from all the conferences and doing it like the old days where they just line all of them up. And I don't know if it's going to happen, because, you know, they've run into some issues, and at least for another year it won't happen because they can't figure out the long-term agreements of the CFP. They can't finalize them because they can't figure out the long-term future of the CFP and the format, so it's slowing everything down. But they do want to do that.
I want to empower the people in the fluorescent blazers again. Like, I want them to matter. I feel bad when I see them in the press box now, because I know they have no real power. They're there. I'm scouting the game. No, you're not.
Yeah,
you're eating popcorn.
It's the best gig in the world, man.
But now they might have real power. Like, they could go into the locker room after a coach. So, you know, we could sweeten the deal with you if you want to accept the bid to our bowl on November 15th.
All right, I'm going to pull. This might not be totally accurate, because I was trying to get a kid to sleep the other night, so I was doing the social scroll on mute. The certain parents of certain ages understand what I was doing. What bowl is Arkansas State in? We're going to have to fact check this in real time, but I saw a reel. I saw this last night. Okay, Arkansas State has a team meeting I think this is this event possibly sponsored by Microsoft.
That would be Missouri State and Arkansas State.
Uh-huh. And who's the sponsor?
Good question. It is at the Star, which is okay. Where the Cowboys practice.
Right. So in Frisco. No, yes.
No, here, not a huge stadium.
Butch Jones having a team meeting. Guess what? Some dude from Microsoft walks in. Everybody got an Xbox, a brand new Series X Xbox.
I'm in.
And dude, the place
Xbox Bowl.
Thank you. Okay, that's what I thought. Yes, it was lit because guess what? You got a bunch of Microsoft swag. Like I don't know if it was a Series X or if it was the new portable one, the Raj X, whatever it's called. Like, shocking that a bunch of 22-year-old football players were fired up about an Xbox event. This is not hard. This is not hard to do. This is actually quite easy. It's young people, discretionary income, and us wanting to watch something on television rather than have human conversations. This is American, damn it, and we should do better.
We've solved it. Everybody, clip that last 20 minutes.
Yep.
What Godfrey said, just do that.
I need royalties.
Mm-hmm. Give him some royalties. Give him an Xbox.
Give me some royalties. I'm more of a PS5. I've got a PS5. It's fine.
How dare you?
God. I know. Jeez.
When we return on Thursday, we go deep into the playoff. Yes, there are playoff games this week. Playoffs? We will talk college football playoffs because the first round starts Friday in Norman. And yes, Kalen DeBoer will be there as far as we know. We'll talk to you Thursday.
Go Blue.